Astori Publishing presents Blueprints of a Shifting Skyline. Prologue. London, 7:43 a.m. Sunlight pours through the 30-meter-high lobby of 22 Bishopsgate, the glass spire that now crowns the city's skyline. Yesterday, the tower's sensors, 20,000 of them, wired into every lift, light fitting, and chilled beam vent, logged more than a million data points on temperature, carbon dioxide, energy draw. The building is a living spreadsheet, and its numbers thrill the people who own it, a syndicate of pension funds from Canada, Singapore, and the Gulf. For them, the tower is proof that bricks and mortar can still feel like Silicon Valley stock, liquid, green, and humming with code. Across the Atlantic, Cambridge, Massachusetts wakes to a colder tally. At 200 Sydney Street, a newly minted life science lab sits dark, its polished concrete floors yet to see a pipette. Vacancy across the biotech corridor has climbed to 27%, the highest since the Human Genome Project was still decoding base pairs. Colliers, the brokerage, predicts $2 to $3 billion worth of forced sales here by 2026, once a refinancing wall, $1.2 trillion of U.S. commercial mortgages maturing in 2024-25 meets the reality of 4% plus base rates. A refinancing wall is exactly what it sounds like, a mass of loans all hitting their due dates at once, daring borrowers to find new capital or hand back the keys. Two scenes, one question. Why do the world's largest investors keep steering billions toward property when the ground beneath them feels so unsteady? The answer is unfolding this morning inside an oak-paneled boardroom in Toronto, where the teacher's pension plan reviews its mid-year report. The portfolio dashboard shows real estate at 9.9% of total assets, below the 10.7% policy target. The shortfall comes from the denominator effect, an accounting quirk that appears whenever soaring public equity values, up 26.3% last year, inflate the bottom line of the balance sheet and shrink every slower-moving slice. No one sold a single building, yet the weight of concrete in the portfolio has slipped. The trustees stare at the 80 basis point gap and the tidy phrase beside it, dry powder. In investment slang, dry powder means committed but unspent capital, and here it amounts to roughly 12 billion Canadian dollars waiting for an opening. Maria Gonzalez, the fund's chief investment officer, taps the table. She remembers 2009, when first movers bought towers at half price and posted double-digit gains for a decade. But she also remembers 2013, when rising bond yields made patient cash look heroic. Which playbook applies now? Her dilemma is echoed in Frankfurt, Abu Dhabi, and Melbourne, where committees debate the same slide deck. Is the portfolio merely catching its breath, or is it flirting with permanent underweight? The forces pulling the argument in opposite directions are remarkably clear. On one side, income. Even battered core funds still throw off rents that beat five-year government bonds. On the other, liquidity. Cap rates, shorthand for the yield you earn before debt, have risen, but not as fast as base rates, narrowing the spread that once compensated for illiquidity. Meanwhile, regulators tighten the carbon vise. Buildings generate about 40% of global emissions. New York City's Local Law 97 will fine non-compliant towers starting next year. An office without a retrofit plan is a stranded asset in waiting. Yet the opportunity is just as vivid. Many prime properties now trade below replacement cost, a rarity outside deep recessions. Private equity funds have raised enough capital to buy every office in Chicago twice over, but they are waiting for sellers to blink. In the data rooms of those funds, analysts model loan-to-own scenarios, taking over debt at a discount to reach the keys sooner. If history rhymes, the vintage that closes deals in the next 24 months could define performance for the next 10 years. Seen from this vantage, 22 Bishopsgate is no longer just a shiny tower. It is a thesis. Tech-infused, net-zero-ready assets may command a green premium even in soft markets. The dark lab in Cambridge is the counter-thesis. Specialized space, financed at peak prices, can bleed value faster than any spreadsheet predicted. Somewhere between those extremes lies the path institutional capital must chart. So the stage is set, London's vertical village glittering at dawn, Boston's idle benches whispering caution, and a boardroom cursor blinking over a decision measured in billions. The facts are indisputable, the interpretation is not. Will global allocators close the allocation gap and seize the illiquidity premium, or will they stay sidelined while bond coupons whisper a simpler promise? Chapter 1 begins where every investment does, with the bedrock numbers, but numbers never speak for themselves. They need context, memory, and a dash of foresight. The boardroom clock in Toronto ticks toward 08 twad. Someone clears a throat. The vote is about to be called. End of prologue. Institutional investors, including pensions, endowments, insurers, and sovereign wealth funds, currently allocate an average of 9.9% of their portfolios to real estate, falling short of their 10.7% target. This 80 basis point gap represents tens of billions of dollars withheld from the asset class. The disparity is primarily due to interest rate driven valuation declines in private real estate and the significant growth of public equities, which has inflated the other side of the balance sheet, creating a denominator effect that makes every other portfolio slice appear smaller. The U.S. Private Commercial Real Estate Open-End Diversified Core Equity Index plummeted 12.0% in 2023 and a further 1.4% in 2024, ending a 13-year positive streak. Conversely, public equities surged 26.3% in 2023 and 25.0% in 2024. This contrast highlights the challenge for investment officers to maintain target allocations when one asset class declines while another soars. Despite this short-term volatility, institutional target allocations to real estate have steadily increased since 2013, reaching 10.5% by 2019, with a moderation in growth to 10 basis points in recent years. This slowdown suggests that institutions may be approaching their comfort zone or exercising late-cycle caution. Even at this slower pace, an additional $80 to $120 billion in dry powder is poised to enter the market once conditions stabilize. The enduring appeal of real estate lies in its historical returns. From 2013 to 2023, U.S. CLIP private real estate delivered a 6.36% annualized return, outperforming hedge funds, corporate bonds, and emerging market stocks, while exhibiting lower volatility. Real estate also provides steady income streams, partial inflation hedging, and low correlation with equities and fixed income, making it a strong diversification tool. The illiquidity premium, earned for owning assets that cannot be quickly sold, also attracts investors. History shows that this inconvenience is compensated with higher risk-adjusted yields. The optimal real estate allocation is debated, with models suggesting 13 to 20% and many institutions preferring a more modest 8 to 12%. The average allocation sits at around 11% as of late 2024. Regional targets vary, with EMEA institutions aiming for 11.3% and the Americas and APAC regions forecasting further growth. Regional nuances are also at play, with EMEA institutions setting the highest average target at 11.3%, while the Americas and APAC regions are expected to increase their allocations by another 20 basis points each. This geographic variance reflects different economic cycles, regulatory environments, and market maturity levels. Insurance companies, with long-dated liabilities matching nicely to rental cash flows, have the highest allocation at around 14%. In contrast, Norway's government pension fund Global has set a ceiling of 5%, illustrating how sovereign goals, governance, and liquidity preferences shape allocation decisions. Real estate provides a hybrid investment profile with stable income and potential for capital appreciation, serving as an inflation hedge with historically low correlation with other asset classes. Many institutions view real estate as a core holding for liability matching, with long-term leases generating steady rental income to help meet future pension payments. Endowments prize real assets for their tangible value and as a store of wealth that can endure through market cycles. As interest rates stabilize and real estate valuations adjust to reflect new market realities, capital is expected to redeploy, potentially echoing the 2009 to 2011 period. Assets meeting ESG, tech, and demographic criteria may command a green premium, while obsolete stock risks value erosion. The integration of ESG considerations, technological innovation, and evolving occupier needs will continue to shape institutional real estate investment approaches, creating new opportunities for value creation and risk management. As we sift through the freshest headlines, a big picture emerges. Institutions currently hold an average real estate allocation of 9.9% against a target of 10.7%. This 80 basis point shortfall translates into tens of billions of dollars waiting to find a home in bricks and mortar. The U.S. private commercial real estate's open-end diversified core equity index fell roughly 12.0% in 2023 and 1.4% in 2024, snapping a 13-year run of positive results. Over the same period, global public equity benchmarks surged about 26.3% and 25.0%, respectively. The denominator effect, public assets swelling while private values sag, pulled real estate's weight inside multi-asset portfolios lower, even when chief investment officers made no new allocation decisions. Performance pain has been brutal in headlines, but oddly constructive beneath the surface. Values have adjusted fast, so fast that many assets now transact at steep concessions to their 2022 peaks. Across multiple U.S. markets, loan-to-own investors are negotiating entry prices 40 to 50% below those pre-rate hike highs. For buyers with fresh capital, the risk-reward equation now resembles the post-global financial crisis window between 2009 and 2011, when first movers locked in exceptional five-year returns. Transaction data confirm that bargain hunters are already testing the water. Global investment volumes in the fourth quarter of 2024 were roughly 40% higher than the same period a year earlier, marking the first material rebound since central banks began hiking rates. Sellers have accepted that higher policy rates translate into higher cap rates and lower prices. Buyers, in turn, see enough discount to underwrite equity returns that clear their internal hurdles. This buyer-seller convergence is the precondition for liquidity, and liquidity is stirring again. The United States faces a refinancing wall, about $1.2 trillion of commercial mortgages maturing in 2024 and 2025. Many of those loans were underwritten when base rates hovered near zero. At today's yields, debt service coverage ratios have sagged, and some borrowers will struggle to roll their loans without additional equity. Distress, therefore, will not be limited to marginal assets. Even high-quality buildings may change hands if owners cannot plug the gap between old and new debt costs. A live illustration is unfolding in Greater Boston's Life Science Corridor. Vacancy in Cambridge lab space sits near 26.9%, and Colliers projects $2 to $3 billion of forced lab property sales by 2026 as loans mature and leasing lags. The faster prices find an equilibrium, the sooner the 80 basis point allocation gap can close. Institutions have earmarked an estimated $80 to $120 billion of dry powder capital for real estate once they regain conviction. Discounted asset pricing, a thawing transaction market, and the prospect of locking in outsized yield premiums all accelerate that timing. Patience alone is not a strategy. The current window rewards analytical speed and operational agility. Investors must underwrite deals assuming higher terminal cap rates than they grew accustomed to before 2022, and must solve for debt service at coupons 200 to 300 basis points above the prior cycle's average. Discipline leverage, local operating expertise, and contingency capital separate winners from the merely brave. As we transition to the next section, we'll move from today's front page figures to the structural trends, technology, demographics, and sustainability that will shape performance once the current storm passes. In this segment, we'll trace how three structural forces, sustainability mandates, technology adoption, and shifting occupier behavior, are already rewriting real estate playbooks and, by extension, the routes through which institutional capital flows. The built environment generates roughly 40% of global carbon emissions, exceeding the combined output of all vehicles, ships, and planes. This statistic is a clarion call to action, as carbon emissions are the industry's most pressing issue. Regulators worldwide have taken notice, with New York City's Local Law 97 set to impose annual penalties on buildings failing to meet tightening emissions limits from 2025. The Empire State Building's owners invested around $30 million in retrofits, avoiding future fines and saving an estimated $4 million annually on energy. The investment community is now pricing in this risk. By 2021, 60% of global institutional real estate investors applied a formal environmental, social, and governance screen to every deal they analyzed. Assets in dedicated real estate impact funds have surged by 220%, reaching approximately 37 billion euro globally, with about 73% targeting affordable housing. ESG has become a must-have rather than a feel-good consideration. Real estate investment trusts, or REITs, reflect this shift. 60% of the global listed REIT universe now resides in new economy niches such as data centers, logistics warehouses, and life science labs, driven by secular megatrends. A recent global survey found that 39% of institutions invest in REITs, with 67% citing liquidity as the primary advantage. Public and private markets are converging into a single toolkit for portfolio construction. Retrofit strategies offer one avenue for impact and ESG capital. For example, Brookfield's 106 Bishopsgate in London upgraded its energy efficiency, securing a BREEAM excellent rating. This not only reduced operating costs but also attracted higher rents. Investors are taking note, as green buildings often command higher rents, lower vacancy rates, and consequently, higher asset values. Technology is also transforming the industry. PropTech has moved from a buzzword to a critical component of real estate strategy. Internet of Things sensors measure temperature, motion, and energy use in real time, enabling managers to optimize performance. At 22 Bishopsgate in London, over 20,000 sensors feed a building operating system, providing engineers with a comprehensive view of performance. Artificial intelligence leasing platforms are also delivering results, with AI-outfitted space in Greater Boston's life science cluster leasing 2.5 times faster than conventional lab listings. Faster leasing reduces cash burn on free rent concessions and improves lender confidence. Predictive maintenance algorithms flag potential equipment failures, reducing downtime and repair costs. Technology is also changing capital formation, with the St. Regis Aspen Resort raising $18 million through tokenizing a minority equity stake on the blockchain in 2018. Occupier behavior is another key factor. Office utilization in North America and Europe stabilized at around 30 to 50% of pre-pandemic levels by 2024, with Asia-Pacific seeing higher return-to-office rates near 60%. London's overall office vacancy touched 10%, its highest in 2 decades, yet prime, amenity-rich space achieved rent growth of roughly 7.5%. Tenants are willing to pay more for space that enhances collaboration, wellness, and ESG credentials. Flexible leases and space-as-a-service models are emerging as a result. Landlords are creating plug-and-play suites with smartphone-based access and premium services, charging higher revenue density. Asset managers now track metrics like desk utilization and dwell time analytics alongside net operating income. These forces redefine what constitutes core real estate. a 30-year-old office building without a decarbonization pathway, IoT retrofit, or amenities may face obsolescence. Lenders and rating agencies are taking notice, widening discount rates. Conversely, modern, tech-enabled assets may see cap rate compression. Norges Bank Investment Management's sale of an aging Paris office and redeployment into a French logistics portfolio with solar-ready rooftops illustrates this shift. The yield spread reportedly exceeded 70 basis points, demonstrating the potential for brown-to-green arbitrage. Listed REITs are sending similar signals, with data center REITs outperforming the FTSE Nareit All Equity Index by over 30 percentage points since 2020. Portfolio strategists must now incorporate sustainability, technology, and tenant preference metrics into acquisition checklists. Listed REITs and open-end funds offer tactical bridges when private market deal flow slows. 39% of institutions already invest in REITs, with two-thirds citing liquidity as the reason. Governments are also amplifying this theme, with regulations like the EU's Sustainable Finance Disclosure Regulation influencing fund marketing and management fees. The data is clear. Buildings account for 40% of global emissions. 60% of investors screen for ESG. Impact fund assets have grown 220% to approximately 37 billion euro. 73% of those funds target affordable housing. 60% of listed REIT value is in new economy sectors. 39% of institutions invest in REITs, citing liquidity. Office utilization is at 30-50% in the West and 60% in Asia Pacific. London's vacancy is 10%, with prime rents up 7.5%, and AI-ready labs lease 2.5 times faster than standard space. Investors who ignore these trends risk deploying capital into obsolete assets, while those who adapt will build portfolios that are more resilient and attractive to tenants and investors alike. Here is the polished narration for part 4, within the specified guidelines. In the hub of Cambridge, Massachusetts, a dramatic reversal is unfolding in the life science property market. Vacancy rates have skyrocketed to 25% in the first quarter of 2025, a stark contrast to the 18% peak during the early 2000s post-dot-com lull. This surge matters because available lab space now outstrips demand by a staggering 8-to-1 ratio, with 16.3 million square feet of space facing only 1.9 million square feet of active tenant demand. An additional 4.2 million square feet is under construction, exacerbating the supply glut. Cambridge, once the darling of biotech investors, now exemplifies the rapid shift in sentiment. Vacancies in this district reached 26.9% in the fourth quarter of 2024, with net absorption plummeting to minus 1.1 million square feet, the first annual decline in a decade. Yet, development persisted, with projects like Eli Lilly's $700 million Fort Point Channel facility and MIT Biomed Realty's 75 Broadway Tower delivering an additional 1 million square feet of lab space in the first quarter of 2025. This influx of supply, coupled with slowing venture funding, has created a bifurcated market. Tier 1 assets, often pre-leased to investment-grade tenants, remain resilient, while Tier 2 and Tier 3 speculative projects languish with vacancies over 30% in areas like the Seaport and Route 128. Biogen's 15-year, 580,000-square-foot lease at 75 Broadway epitomizes the Tier 1 segment in contrast to the vacant opening of the former Aubon Payne headquarters, redeveloped for Ginkgo Bioworks. Colliers predicts that rising loan defaults will unleash a wave of forced lab property sales, totaling $2 to $3 billion by 2026, echoing the distressed sales that followed the global financial crisis. Rental rates have also taken a hit, with asking rents in Kendall Square slipping from $130 to $150 per square foot in 2023 to $110 to $125 per square foot in early 2025. Effective rates, after concessions, have dropped to $85 to $100 per square foot, a 25 to 35% decline. Cap rates for prime labs have expanded from 3.8 to 4.2% in 2022 to 4.5-5.5% today, with distressed trades in secondary markets reaching 6.5 to 7.5%. REITs have responded with a three-pronged strategy: concession stacking to mitigate sticker shock, flex space conversions to adapt to changing demand, and selective distress buying at 40 to 50% below 2022 valuations. BioMed Realty, backed by Blackstone, is focusing on build-to-suit developments to avoid speculative risk, while Alexandria Real Estate Equities is paring down suburban holdings to protect its Kendall Square core. Vacancies across the metro now range from 24.1 to 31.2%, with pharma companies accounting for 68% of new leases, up from 42% in 2021, and startups' share dwindling from 35% to 12% as venture capital retreats. Analysts forecast vacancies will peak at 30 to 34% by the third quarter of 2025, with Seaport effective rents bottoming out at $65 to $75 per square foot. An estimated $1.2 to $1.8 billion in distressed dispositions is expected through 2026. The investment thesis is shifting. Focus on enduring innovation clusters like Kendall Square or the Longwood Medical Area, where Premium Labs maintains sub-15% vacancy. Lock in fixed-rate debt, as floating-rate loans have become perilous. Note that facilities designed for AI or machine learning workflows lease 2.5 times faster than conventional layouts, underscoring technological readiness as the new benchmark. In contrast, London's 22 Bishopsgate stands as a testament to the power of design, amenities, and sustainability in overcoming a soft office cycle. This 62-story vertical village boasts 100,000 square feet of shared amenities, 1,700 bicycle spaces, and a BREEAM excellent rating, running entirely on renewable electricity. Despite initial doubts, the building achieved rents of roughly £80 to £100 per square foot by pre-leasing substantial tranches to blue-chip law and tech firms before completion. The project's earlier incarnation, The Pinnacle, had stalled during the global financial crisis. The revived consortium learned from this misstep, phasing construction, securing robust insurance, and initiating leasing campaigns well ahead of completion. The outcome: a fully functional 90% occupied tower emerging from pandemic lockdowns, reinforcing the notion that prime addresses retain liquidity even in capital-scarce environments. BioMed Realty's recapitalization, led by Blackstone, offers a complementary narrative. By concentrating on gateway life science nodes, securing long-duration leases with investment-grade covenants, and avoiding marginal yields in tertiary areas, the platform has created a resilient portfolio. The $14.6 billion recap in 2020 moved BioMed into a perpetual core plus fund, offering limited partners liquidity without a fire sale. A similar approach underpins the Gateway Fund with its globally diversified portfolio of over 3,100 tenants. By pacing deployment, avoiding cycle peaks, and partnering with local experts, this fund exemplifies the discipline seen in BioMed and 22 Bishopsgate. These case studies distill the new rules for real estate engagement: differentiate to avoid pricing 50% below last cycle's peaks, integrate ESG credentials with experiential design to justify premiums and compress cap rates, and engineer the capital stack for turbulence through phased funding, long-term fixed-rate debt, or innovative continuation vehicles. As we look to the next section, these micro-lessons will inform portfolio-level decisions, from geographic diversification and currency hedging to timing the $75 billion in dry powder awaiting deployment, enabling institutional capital to navigate the decade ahead with conviction. Imagine a seesaw on a windy day. On one side, listed equities that gyrated upward by more than 25% 2 years in a row. On the other, brick-and-mortar holdings that reprice slowly, almost grudgingly. That visual captures why chief investment officers now spar so fiercely over whether their portfolios sit at a healthy equilibrium or remain materially short of hard assets. Start with the only scorecard everyone acknowledges. Across pensions, endowments, insurers, and sovereign wealth funds, real estate represents 9.9% of total assets, while published policy targets average 10.7%. the 80 basis point gap equals tens of billions of deployable capital. One camp shrugs, "We're close enough, move on." Their opponents say the shortfall is a mirage created by the denominator effect, where soaring equity markets lift the overall portfolio denominator and make every slower moving slice look smaller. With public stocks up 26.3% in 2023 and another 25.0% in 2024, real estate weights naturally slipped, even if no one sold a single building. Academic allocation models weigh in hard. Long-run optimization studies show that a 13 to 20% allocation to property would have delivered the best risk-adjusted outcome for a typical institutional portfolio over multiple decades. In practice, boards rarely venture that far. Most fix policy bands around 8 to 12%. Late 2024 survey data place the real-world average near 11%. Outliers illustrate how mandates override theory. U.S. life insurers hold roughly 14% because predictable rental cash flows dovetail with their liability streams, while Norway's government pension fund Global caps bricks and mortar at 5% to preserve liquidity for daily oil revenue transfers to the Treasury. Pro-growth advocates bolster their case with performance history. U.S. private real estate compounded at 6.36% annually from 2013 to 2023, beating hedge funds, corporate bonds, and emerging market equities with meaningfully lower volatility. Critics respond that those same assets can freeze precisely when liquidity is most coveted. Witness open-end diversified core equity funds tumbling minus 12.0% in 2023 and minus 1.4% in 2024 after 13 serene years. So, is the ascent over? Target weights climbed steadily from 2013, adding 20 to 40 basis points a year before decelerating to a mere 10 basis points, the weakest uptick in 6 years. Paranews now projects only a 0.1% dip for 2025, suggesting stasis rather than capitulation. The bulls counter that this plateau understates the $80 to $120 billion of already raised dry powder waiting for spreads to settle. Then come bond yields, the needle many thought had been retired. U.S. 10-year treasuries hover near 4.5%, rekindling boardroom nostalgia for simple, liquid coupons. Why chase a 5% unlevered core real estate yield when you can get almost the same return from a treasury? The rebuttal? Property still offers an illiquidity premium that widens when lenders retreat, plus embedded upside from leasing, redevelopment, or the green premium. Commanded by assets upgraded to net zero standards. Liquidity choice sparks the next skirmish. Roughly 39% of institutions already use real estate investment trusts, and 67% of that subgroup cite immediate tradability as the draw. Listed shares also open doors to new economy sectors. Data centers, cell towers, labs, and last-mile logistics now comprising about 60% of global REIT market cap. Yet liquidity is a two-edged sword. During the 2023 ODCE dip, the FTSE Nareit All-Equity Index swung more than 15% in a single day. Some Australian REITs whipped 30% peak to trough before recovering. Fundraising trends add another data point. INREV and ANR Aviv still report robust inflows to value-add and opportunistic vehicles. Managers argue that once an institution has staffed a 30-person real estate desk, exiting the asset class becomes structurally expensive. Denominator mechanics further muddy the water. Equity rallies alone sliced real estate weights during 2023-2024. Optimists insist this proves investors did not consciously de-risk. Bears retort that any rebuild must now compete with ultra-liquid government bonds yielding close to historic averages. All of which nudges committees toward a blended answer. Let private funds capture the illiquidity premium and smoothed returns, bolt on REITs for sector tilts and tactical agility, and rebalance between the two as cycles roll. Survey evidence supports that synthesis, near universal use of private vehicles alongside rising REIT adoption. Consider the fourth quarter of 2024. global transaction volumes jumped roughly 40% year over year as buyers with locked-in capital stepped off the sidelines. Why belabor these nuances? Because vehicle structure governs who can pounce when opportunity knocks and who must liquidate when redemptions surge. An open-end core fund facing withdrawal requests may be forced to sell trophy assets into a thin market. A sovereign wealth fund holding assets directly can ride out the downdraft. A nimble REIT allocator can double exposure overnight. Liquidity option versus illiquidity premium. Different tools for different risk budgets. Step back and the pattern is clear. Nobody is abandoning real estate. Target growth has slowed, not reversed, and the forecast 0.1% decline for 2025 barely registers against a decade-long rise of 200 basis points. Meanwhile, $80 to $120 billion of earmarked capital waits for price discovery to finish its messy work. Whether that money flows into closed-end value-add funds, open-ended core pools, or exchange-traded REITs will depend on each board's answer to today's central question: plateau or underweight, and how much is liquidity worth when bonds pay 4 to 5%. Keep that debate in mind as we pivot to the next chapter. The valuation mechanics, cash flow underwriting, and scenario modeling we dissect next will reveal which investors possess the analytical depth and the patience to turn today's uncertainty into tomorrow's outperformance. In this segment, we'll put the microscope on the hard numbers that have been flashing across investor dashboards. Think of it as a rapid-fire state of play before we close the course. Let's start with the macro allocation scoreboard. Across pensions, insurers, endowments, and sovereign funds, real estate currently weighs in at 9.9% of portfolio assets versus a policy target of 10.7%. This 80 basis point shortfall represents roughly $80 to $120 billion of dry powder parked on the sidelines. The gap emerged despite a 200 basis point climb in average targets since 2013. The discrepancy is largely due to the stark contrast in performance between private real estate and public equities. U.S. open-end diversified core equity funds fell 12.0% in 2023 and another 1.4% in 2024, snapping a 13-year winning streak. Meanwhile, public equity sprinted 26.3%, and then 25.0% over the same period, diluting every slower-moving asset in the denominator. Yet, zooming out a decade, private U.S. real estate still logged a 6.36% compound annual growth rate, beating hedge funds, corporate bonds, and emerging market stocks on a risk-adjusted basis. Capital market stress is clearest in debt statistics. Roughly $1.2 trillion of U.S. commercial mortgages mature in 2024 and 2025. Lenders now underwrite at coupons 200 to 300 basis points above the pre-hike era, so borrowers lacking fresh equity may be forced into sales or restructurings. For instance, Colliers projects $2 to $3 billion of forced lab property sales in Greater Boston alone by 2026. Boston's numbers deserve a spotlight. Vacancy across the metro's biotech labs hit 25% in the first quarter of 2025. Supply totals 16.3 million square feet, while active demand is only 1.9 million, a demand-to-supply ratio of roughly 1 to 8.5. Another 4.2 million square feet is still under construction. Cambridge vacancies touched 26.9%, with net absorption swinging to negative 1.1 million square feet, its first annual contraction in a decade. Asking rents in Kendall Square slid from $130 to $150 per square foot in 2023, down to $110 to $125 by early 2025. Effective rents after concessions fell to $85 to $100, a 25 to 35% erosion. Cap rates tell the risk story. Tier 1 labs widened to 4.5 to 5.5%, while distressed Tier 2 trades now print 6.5 to 7.5%. Even so, Biogen's 15-year, 580,000-square-foot pre-lease at 75 Broadway shows blue-chip tenants will still pay for best-in-class space. London's skyline offers a counterpoint. Office utilization averages only 30 to 50% of pre-pandemic levels in North America and Europe. Asia Pacific is stronger at roughly 60%, but the City of London's headline vacancy sits near 10%, a 20-year high. Prime, amenity-rich towers buck the trend. Rents for top-tier space advanced roughly 7.5% in 2024. Exhibit A is 22 Bishopsgate, the 62-story, 278-meter vertical village. It carries 100,000 square feet of shared amenities, houses 1,700 bicycle stations, runs on 100% renewable electricity, and is wired with over 20,000 sensors. Pre-completion leases achieved roughly £80 to £100 per square foot, proof that ESG plus experience still commands a premium. Regionally, EMEA institutions target an average 11.3% allocation, the highest globally. Americas and APAC investors each plan 20 basis point increases over the next review cycle, even after recent volatility. Strategy buckets follow familiar return bands. Core aims for 7 to 10% total return, dominated by income. Value add seeks 12 to 15%. Opportunistic underwrites 18% plus, often via development or heavy repositioning. This risk ladder aligns with fund design. Open-end core vehicles are perpetual, offering quarterly redemptions, whereas closed-end value-add and opportunistic funds run 8 to 12 years from first close to terminal liquidation. Fee economics reinforce the pattern. Management fees typically land between 1 to 1.5% of committed or invested equity, dipping below 1% for low-risk core pools and edging higher for complex, niche strategies. Performance carry in closed-end funds remains 20% of profits above an 8% preferred return, with general partner co-investment ranging from 1 to 5% of fund size to keep incentives aligned. Liquidity alternatives are proliferating. 39% of surveyed institutions already hold REITs, and 67% of that group cite day-to-day tradability as the main draw. New economy assets, data centers, logistics, cell towers, and life science labs now represent about 60% of global REIT market value, allowing allocators to fine-tune sector exposure without waiting for private market queues to clear. Impact and ESG capital provide another current. 60% of global real estate investors run a formal ESG screen, and assets in dedicated impact vehicles have surged 220% to roughly 37 billion euros. 73% of those funds target affordable housing, dovetailing with regulatory pushes for social benefit. Technology metrics are just as striking. At 22 Bishopsgate, the 20,000 sensor network cuts energy waste and tracks occupancy in real time. Across Greater Boston, lab space marketed with AI infrastructure leases 2.5 times faster than conventional listings, a tangible prop tech dividend. Debt markets remain cautious. Lenders now quote senior loans at 50 to 60% LTV on core assets, lower on development, while insisting on debt service coverage cushions above 1.3 times pro forma cash flow. Higher coupons mean coverage ratios on legacy loans have compressed, forcing equity top-ups at refinancing. The upshot, private credit funds are stepping in where banks retrench, demanding mid-single-digit spreads over base rates. Institutional platforms able to coordinate globally, yet execute locally, retain an edge. Morgan Stanley Real Estate Investing spans 17 offices in 12 countries, illustrating the scale that lets a manager harvest Tokyo-grade data center growth one quarter and Madrid residential distress the next, all under a single risk umbrella. These numbers matter because they map the contours of the next deployment wave. $80 to $120 billion of earmarked capital will flow toward assets that satisfy three tests. They refinance safely in a 4% plus rate world. They embed tech that boosts leasing velocity or trims operating costs, and they meet the carbon reduction metrics regulators are steadily ratcheting up. Assets that fail those tests risk transacting at 40 to 50% discounts to 2022 valuations. Put simply, the data sing the same refrain. Liquidity has returned, but only for the right buildings, in the right capital structures, with the right decarbonization and digital roadmaps. Everything else sits in the penalty box, waiting for either price or purpose to reset. In our final episode, we'll translate these statistics into concrete portfolio moves, how to pace deployment, stack capital, and measure success when the numbers are this unforgiving. In this closing segment, we'll stitch together every thread, risk, structure, governance, and outlook, so that the figures we've tracked for six parts become a usable playbook for the years ahead. Institutional real estate investing starts with a three-part risk framework: illiquidity, concentration, and currency risk. Illiquidity refers to the reality that properties like office towers and shopping centers cannot be sold quickly, unlike publicly traded securities. This characteristic explains why property has historically delivered an extra return, known as the illiquidity premium. Concentration risk arises when a portfolio is overly weighted in a single city, sector, or sponsor, making it vulnerable to local market downturns. Currency risk occurs when rents are received in one currency, but liabilities are denominated in another, potentially eroding returns if exchange rates move unfavorably. To manage these risks, investors must measure, budget, and price them before making an investment. For instance, U.S. open-end diversified core equity funds experienced significant declines in 2023, minus 12.0%, and 2024, minus 1.4%, yet few investors could exit their positions quickly due to illiquidity. Conversely, disciplined investors who could lock in capital for the long term, such as a decade, captured annualized returns of 6.36% between 2013 and 2023, outperforming hedge funds and corporate bonds. Concentration risk is evident in the Cambridge biotech corridor, where vacancy rates have soared to 26.9% and effective rents have dropped by 25 to 35%. Portfolios heavily concentrated in this area have felt the full impact, while globally diversified portfolios have mitigated this risk. Currency risk plays out when a European pension fund collects dollar-denominated rents and sees gains reduced if the euro strengthens against the dollar. To hedge this risk, many investors use forward contracts or borrow in the local currency to create a natural offset. For example, a European investor with dollar rents might enter into a forward contract to sell dollars at a predetermined rate, thereby protecting against adverse currency movements. Capital structure is another critical component of institutional real estate investing. A typical capital stack might include 50% senior bank debt, 10% mezzanine debt, and 40% equity, as seen in some Dubai developments. Senior lenders have the first claim on assets and receive lower returns, while equity holders bear the first loss but are entitled to residual profits. The use of leverage can magnify returns if the property performs well, but it also increases the risk of losses if costs overrun or the market declines. The Aldersgate refinancing in London illustrates the importance of monitoring debt service coverage ratios, which dropped from 1.8 times to 1.1 times after interest rates rose, leaving little buffer for potential downturns. Developers often use alternative financing strategies such as off-plan sales, particularly in emerging markets. By securing buyer deposits during construction, developers can reduce their reliance on bank loans, lower carrying costs, and accelerate project timelines. However, this approach relies on solid consumer confidence and regulatory frameworks. Cross-border investments require thorough due diligence, involving local legal counsel to confirm property rights, tax advisors to model potential liabilities, and currency strategists to assess hedging costs over the investment holding period. The Global Real Estate Transparency Index is a useful tool for benchmarking market transparency, which can significantly impact investment decisions. In highly transparent markets like the UK, valuation comparables are plentiful and lease contracts are enforceable. In contrast, emerging markets may require political risk insurance or joint ventures with local partners to navigate opaque regulatory environments. CIT fund design is critical in translating the complexities of real estate investing into investor-friendly products. A typical closed-end fund might charge a management fee of 1 to 1.5% per annum, with a 20% performance carry above an 8% preferred return. Key person clauses are often included to protect investors in case key managers leave. Open-end core funds may opt for lower base fees and an ongoing incentive fee instead of the traditional waterfall structure. European fund managers are increasingly branding their vehicles as Article 8 or Article 9 under the EU's Sustainable Finance Disclosure Regulation to attract ESG-conscious capital. The Norway Government Pension Fund Global exemplifies robust internal real estate capability, with a team of 135 specialists who screen, acquire, and manage properties worldwide. The fund's strategic pacing is deliberate, avoiding market peaks and downturns. This approach is mirrored in its broader investment philosophy, which emphasizes gradual accumulation and periodic pauses during periods of overheating. ESG disclosure has become increasingly systematic, with 60% of global investors applying formal ESG screens. The Global Real Estate Sustainability Benchmark has emerged as a de facto standard for assessing energy use, carbon trajectory, and tenant well-being. Properties that demonstrate a credible path to net zero carbon are securing cheaper financing and lower exit cap rates, a phenomenon known as the green premium. Conversely, assets lacking retrofit plans risk value erosion and regulatory penalties. Effective communication remains vital in institutional real estate investing as it builds trust between investors and managers. Quarterly reports must reconcile financial metrics, debt covenants, and ESG performance. Annual general meetings provide an opportunity for investors to question the team on strategy and performance. Ad hoc alerts are necessary for significant events like lease terminations or environmental incidents. Managers who undercommunicate risk eroding investor confidence, while those who overcommunicate without substance can lose credibility. Looking forward, the allocation gap between actual 9.9% and target 10.7% allocation still represents $80 to $120 billion in dry powder. As interest rate volatility subsides and valuations stabilize, this capital is poised to redeploy into assets with conservative leverage, embedded technology, and verifiable ESG credentials. Properties lacking these attributes but trading at significant discounts to their 2022 peaks may struggle to attract capital. In conclusion, institutional real estate investing requires a comprehensive framework that addresses risk, capital structure, governance, and ESG considerations. By recognizing illiquidity, concentration, and currency risk as non-negotiable tripwires, engineers can create capital stacks that flex under stress. Alternative funding strategies like off-plan sales can be effective when bank debt is scarce. Granular international due diligence is essential, and funds should be structured with transparent fees, key person backstops, and a focus on ESG performance. The toolkit for unlocking real estate's fundamentals has matured, incorporating technology and sustainability. By deploying this toolkit wisely and communicating clearly, the allocation gap can be closed, opening a new chapter of resilient, sustainable, and tech-enabled performance for decades to come. Thank you for choosing Astori Publishing.